Morrison. Reel one.
Only 2 months old. He was Scots, came from Aberdeen. My mother was English, and I was born here in London. I think you would say that it was very much a Tory environment. We had servants and nannies and nurses. So I must have been a rebel, I think, from the start, because I was about 18, I suppose, when I joined the Women's Social and Political Union, which was Mrs. Pankhurst's organisation in the struggle for the vote.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
No, I have one sister. She was older than me.
Was she also a rebel?
Well, she's not unsympathetic to my ideas, but no, she behaved in a proper way, got married and has children and grandchildren now. But her husband, of course, went to the war, the First World War, was gassed and shell-shocked, finally, not surprisingly, I suppose, because he couldn't get a job when he came home. Somewhere around about 1928 he committed suicide. I've always thought of him as a war casualty. It was really upsetting for these people. He'd been a estate agent to Lord Harrington and promised that his job would remain open. The old Earl died, somebody else came in, there was no job open. And this going around the labour exchanges was one of the First World War horrors. Home fit for heroes to live in, and they couldn't live in it.
What about your own education?
Well, I was educated at Wickham Abbey, which you may have heard of, and I was at Oxford for a time.
But were you reading?
English literature. I had an idea that I might write, but I never have really, except in an amateurish way, that is, I've never been paid. I contributed for many years to Peace News, which is a pacifist newspaper, every week. I did a lot of open air speaking also. This was after the war. I don't know. I think I told you before that I took a shorthand and typing, bookkeeping course, and I had a few jobs like that after the war was over.
Before the war, when you were 18, you joined the
suffragettes. Oh yes, the suffragettes.
What
yes.
were you doing with them?
Well, I did what one well, did in those days. You carried posters, you gave out leaflets. Oh, they still do it, of course. Gave out leaflets, you had big meetings, you helped with them, you attended them. I was only very young, and they had a very strong rule in the Women's Social and Political Union that you mustn't go to prison until you were 21. They wouldn't allow you to do the things that would get you into prison if you were under 21. Well, I was 21 when the war came, so I wasn't in prison then. I was in prison during the Second World War.
Did you ever meet Mrs. Pankhurst?
Yes. Not intimately. From kind of afar off, but very proud to know her and shake hands with her. She was a very beautiful woman. And with the exception of Lloyd George, one of the best orators I've ever heard. Lloyd George, who would turn in his grave if he knew, was the person who really turned me into a socialist. He had a great flair as an orator. So I really broke away from my environment altogether.
How did you come to join the suffragettes?
Well, it wasn't difficult. There was a great deal of publicity, and had been for a very long time. I suppose I have always felt that this was something that ought to be, that women should have the same opportunity as men to play a part in their own world. So I just went to the headquarters and asked. You had quickly roped in upon she said you wanted to join. But I knew the Pethick Lawrences better than I knew Mrs. Pankhurst, because I kept in touch with them, and she was very much a pacifist, Emmeline Pethick Lawrence. Whereas Mrs. Pankhurst threw down everything and went to the war. Well, so did I.
Is it because of Mrs. Pankhurst? Did she inspire you to join?
No, I don't think she did. I think it was the... I think we were conned. We were made to believe this was a war, to end all wars, and that there'd never be another war. I don't know how I could have been so foolish, because my intelligence tells me... Not my experience, my intelligence tells me that you can't end wars by using wars. But we believed it, or we certainly believed it.
Was the war a surprise to you?
I think it was, yes. Yes, I think it was. It was only quite near the end. There's only one thing I remember that I was impressed by, and that was a book by Norman Angell called The Great Illusion. He was an economist of considerable repute, I think. And he's pointed out that all these little battleships that the Germans were making, and which we replied to with our big dreadnoughts, would only lead to war in the end. I remember reading that book. I still have it, actually.
Can you remember the day the war began?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think it was a bank holiday. Now, this is one of the things Harold Bing would remember and tell you. He'd know the exact date, too. I think it was a bank holiday. What I chiefly remember about London in those days was the excitement. People were excited by it. They weren't horrified by it as they were in the Second World War. It was completely different. They were excited by it. They rushed out in the streets and followed the soldiers if they were marching through the streets and kissed them and threw flowers. And seemed to think it was something to be thrilled about, because we were told it was all going to be over by Christmas. We believed that, and it went on. And then, of course, there was the terrible disaster of Kitchener being drowned. And I've always believed, this is merely an opinion, I have absolutely no evidence of it at all, that he was got rid of. Everybody says that he was terribly tiresome, that he lived in the days of riding up and down on horses in the Sudan, and couldn't get into the new ways. So what was he doing somewhere or other in the Baltic, I think it was? What was he doing there? And there were two destroyers and everything was blown up and nobody knew a thing. I've always believed he was got rid of. You have to get rid of people. But we thought, this is the end, Kitchener. But far from it. Lloyd George came in then and we started sending armaments to France. And I think I'm probably giving you a wrong impression, because really the awful thing was the people who were killed, the slaughtering that was going on, and these terrible knocks on the door with telegrams saying, regret to have bombed you, so and so killed in action. And I think it's because of this slaughter of a whole generation that we, my generation, think they were so wonderful. They're all beautiful creatures to us. And I think back to them, my young cousins and my friends, they all seem so wonderful. It's only because they died before they were, before they should have. I think so. And you can contrast, really, with the way in which all these little shrines sprang up all over the country, you'll find them, commemorating the First World War and the Cenotaph. When it came to the Second World War, we didn't know what to do about that, so we just stuck it on. But most of them had never again, and that these people had died so that it would be never again. So it was a bit satirical, really. Now, was that what you wanted me to talk about?
Yes.
My own family life, you really thought. Well, that's all I can really tell you about it, that I remained in London and I was not a Christian pacifist, though I was confirmed and brought up in the Anglican Church. But I think I cast all that away fairly soon in my life.
After the war began, you trotted down to find what you could do
Yes, almost right away, yes.
How did you get involved with ambulance driving?
Well, I had a friend who was doing that, and she said they need drivers terribly badly. Now, this is what I can't remember. I can't remember where the headquarters place was. But anyway, I went with her, and what I had to do, of course, was to learn to drive, first of all, because I couldn't. So you had to take a course. You had to learn to drive, and then you had to do a course of what they called running repairs. You had to be able to do a puncture. You didn't change your wheel then and have a nice new thing. You had to get it off, and it was quite complicated. But you had to be able to do it, though you might not necessarily do it. And you also had to take what they called a St. John's ambulance first aid training. Not that you ever had to do that either, but you might have had to, I suppose. It depended what you were on. And I was all the time on going to stations and taking the wounded to hospitals. I was not called out on ordinary casualties. Though there were people assigned to do that, should there be raids. But then again, I can't remember. I don't think there were very many raids. But I do remember that little boys on bicycles rushed through the streets. Blowing whistles, I think. Which was the means of giving the alert anything was coming, but we didn't have planes. I don't remember, only the Zeppelins.
What would a day be like for you as an ambulance driver?
Well, we worked in shifts, so that there'd be some days when I would be on at night. But you see, you weren't exactly on call. You knew what time the trains were coming in and when you had to go. I think it was three shifts. Well, this is what I can't remember very well, but I think we had three shifts. And when you weren't on duty, you could do what you liked.
So how often would you have to be driving back and forth in a day?
Well, you might have only one thing to do in the morning, because it took a long time. You had to be there in good time, the station, and then there was all the business of getting the doors open of the trains, getting the stretchers out. And I do see now them spread out, poor creatures, on the platforms. some of them were too ill to mind, but others were glad if they could have a cigarette or somebody speak to them. A lot of well-meaning people used to go down to talk with them and give them cigarettes. But so far as we who were driving concerned, we just had to sit where we were and wait. I'm sure it was admirably organised, but this is something I can't very well remember how it was organised, but it certainly was. And then, of course, you were told where you were to take them to. And you might not have another train in that morning, that would be till the afternoon, when you might not be on.
Would you be taking them far off into the countryside, or just to a London?
No, sometimes, mostly to London. There were a lot of people, some of them weren't so bad that they had to go immediately to hospital. Some of them had already been treated, I suppose, in France.